welcome to Consumer Choice Radio on this, the 14th day of March in the year 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Yael Ososki. We are broadcasting on the Big Talker 106.7 FM out of Wilmington, North Carolina. It's a quite busy day. It's been a busy and amazing week. You can continue to listen to some of our episodes and everything else that we have going on at consumerchoiceradio.com. Please do click around and you'll find our old episodes, the links to the Spotify, the YouTube, and the rest. So I'm broadcasting to you, as I said before, but I'm also here with my co-host, the generous and the amazing Mr. David Clement. David, sir, hello.
Hello, hello. I hope you are holding up well in the craziness that is the coronavirus. What feels like the zombie apocalypse is approaching in terms of how various governments are reacting. So hope you're holding up well. Hope everyone who is listening is safe and holding up well. And looking forward to another week.
I mean, there's really no way to avoid talking about it. It is the big thing on everyone's mind. It has been the number one news item all week. It has, at first, you know, this is something that's very virtual. You know, David, it's something that's online. Many of us might not know someone who is sick. But then basically the personal connections start. There was CPAC. CPAC was took place, about a week ago or something like this, a little bit more. And yep. That's where I learned that there was an attendee who did have the coronavirus. This was a big deal because of Trump. Trump was also there. Trump apparently shook hands with this individual. Many high-profile senators and congressmen shook hands with this individual. He has been unmasked and unnamed. I won't do it here because it's not his fault.
No, of course.
But I was at that same conference. Luckily, I was only there for about an hour, hour and a half, and only did Radio Row, only did an interview on the Big Talker. So I think I'm free. I think my incubation period officially ends tomorrow, 14 days. So I should be okay. Doesn't look too bad. But as you mentioned, things are getting really bad around the world.
Yeah.
And The latest just came earlier this week. This is on Wednesday. We had President Trump came out with his super serious speech, and he talked about what he's going to implement, and this is actually going to hurt me.
After consulting with our top government health professionals, I have decided to take several strong but necessary actions to protect the health and well-being of all Americans. To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days. The new rules will go into effect Friday at midnight. These restrictions will be adjusted subject to conditions on the ground. There will be exemptions for Americans who have undergone appropriate screenings, and these prohibitions will not only apply to the tremendous amount of trade and cargo, but various other things as we get approval. Anything coming from Europe to the United States is what we are discussing. These restrictions will also not apply to the United Kingdom.
Okay, well, so that's what we have there. And we heard the flub. I think it was a flub, or maybe they revised after they saw that it kind of panned. But President Trump announced that all flights from Europe would be banned, and also cargo. So
yes,
this is kind of what,
I think they realized that basically halting all trade from Europe to the United States would be an economic disaster.
Yeah, of course, it'd be a terrible idea. And what this means for me is that I can't get home to North Carolina to go and celebrate my birthday and to see my parents. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I mean, there's some other big questions here, so. There's obviously issues. So as soon as the announcement was made a few nights ago, you just saw Twitter erupt because people were basically saying, well, then if you can't fly from Berlin to New York, then you just fly Berlin to London and then London to New York. And then Canadian Twitter was also basically saying the same, saying, well, everyone will just fly to Toronto or Montreal or Vancouver and then make their
flights. It's a strange world out there.
Yeah, it is very strange. And then make that trip that way. The problem is that if that is the case, it could actually lead to a situation where the U.S. puts pressure on the Canadian government to do the same thing, so that Canada doesn't act as like a backdoor to the U.S. for travelers from Europe.
Yeah,
and so it's
I've seen some wackos who've suggested that Canada actually cut off all travel from the United States as well, which would just be that would be totally insane.
Well, and what's so I'm not an expert on the spread of diseases and things like that, but a couple people who I do traditionally kind of rely on for this, when they break down the epidemiology of how this spreads, you look at if you were to halt all flight traffic into the United States by like 99%, the estimates based on how they model it show that realistically you're only going to delay the peak of the spread of the disease by about, I think it's 28 days or something along those lines. So that is something, but it's not a cure-all for actually stopping the spread of the disease. And a lot of these people who I rely on for this information actually put forward better or more effective policies, which would be simply closing schools, which has the effect of stopping the clustering of students and kids who are obviously in settings where there could be transmission. But it also has the added benefit of, for the most part, keeping the adults in that family at home. Preventing them from doing other social clustering and doing the practice of what is being called social distancing.
And this is a circumstance where, you know, we're seeing that there's a lot of armchair experts out there. But what is kind of troubling is that, you know, this is not just a normal political situation that just, you know, kind of pops up. This is actually something that is happening and has health ramifications, and there's a lot of things that we just don't know, and it's hard for people to understand, you know, how to react. Don't worry though, there are still plenty of people who are weaponizing this in the political arena, in the political field,
sure are,
trying to place blame upon Trump and government people as much as possible. Let's look through some of the latest articles. Because there's just so much that's happening right now. It's insane. So now we mentioned before that there was the kerfuffle over cargo being stopped. Let's actually listen to Don Lemon. He's on CNN.
Yeah.
Probably one of the worst guys ever. I don't know how he is still on television, on CNN. You know, this is one of the largest TV stations. This is him in interview, I believe, with Governor John Kasich, or former governor, I guess. There we go.
Can people happy or political considerations?
Well, listen, the governors can't make choices. They can't, if there are no test kits. If the test kits that the federal government has promised aren't out there, then those governors can't make choices. And you said that, listen, the president should stick to the script. I don't know if he stuck to the script or not, but that whatever script he read was wrong, because they've had to clarify it several times. And I just got to say, if the president came out to calm people's fears, he didn't do a good job of it, because they've had to come back and clarify it several times. And this has been going on for them to get it straight. We need straight, accurate information from this president and this administration, and we're not getting it. And I don't understand why you are tiptoeing around it. He came out, gave an address that happens very rarely, and he doesn't get it right?
I'm going to tell you, first of all, he read it, and somebody that wrote this, look, I don't want to get into that.
That's why you're here to talk about the president's address.
Can I finish now?
John, because we're here to talk about the president's. Wait, we're here. I don't want you to go on and deflect and talk about something else, because we're here to talk about the president's address. And you said that someone else wrote it. He's the president. Even if someone else wrote it, it should be
I know
right.
He did, and he has to be
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like why even have a guest on the show at that point if you don't want to hear his answer? I mean, you might not like his answer, but also, I mean, there's also the underlying issue of, like, John Kasich is probably the most likable man in America.
Oh, sure.
So to be giving it to him.
But he's also a guy who's got executive experience. He understands what it's like to run a populous territory or state. I mean, come on, you can't just shout him down. No. So, you know, that's sort of the Don Lemon sort of argument about this. It's like, oh, we're not getting clarity from Trump. People are just kind of going insane. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. Flights are banned. I can't get on the plane. It's pretty clear. I mean, there's a press conference every single day. You can watch it on YouTube. That's done by Mike Pence and the CDC and all these guys. They give updates on numbers of deaths and people who've contracted and testing and how much is test. I mean, there are definitely questions about how tests are available. And that seems to be the main sort of criticism now is, where are all these tests? And the most valid criticism of this that I'm seeing is a blog post that was over at Cato.org by Walter Olson, who's one of their legal fellows. I'm actually trying to have him on the program at some point. But he talks about how what's really happening here is that the CDC is actually making it harder for individuals to test themselves because it's monopolizing the entire testing process.
Exactly.
But there are all these private labs and private tests that have been made and put together, but they've sort of been centralized. And the thing is the people who are criticizing the administration because of that, they're not taking that argument. They're just saying, well, why don't we have 80 million tests already? Why isn't the CDC just like pumping out? Why don't they just nationalize, you know, all the pharmaceutical industries? And instead of pushing out pills, we push out the tests. Why can't we just do that? And that's the more dangerous thing that comes out of this is the panic and the freaking out. Don Lemon can't even listen to John Kasich, one of the nicest guys ever, talk on TV for 10 seconds.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, at least, again, I say this a lot on this subject. I'm definitely not an expert on the epidemiology of viruses and things like that. But what I am comfortable in terms of saying is that it does appear that there is government policy actually preventing the widespread usage of these tests or the widespread availability of these tests in terms of who actually has the approval to qualify as a test. And I'm blanking on where I read it, but basically there is another company that's been waiting patiently to get their approval and hadn't got it. And now government agencies are basically trying to rush through the process to get it done because there are other players in the game who are willing and able to provide these tests to check for this. And so it's one of those instances where, like you said, everyone is politicizing it. Everyone is making some, like, it's, I think the best tweet I've seen on the coronavirus so far is actually from Nick Gillespie from Reason. If you don't follow him, I strongly encourage you to follow him because he is quite funny. His tweet is, it's going to take me a moment to get, but here it is. He goes, look, the really important thing is that coronavirus perfectly proves every point I've been making for the past 10 years. And he's kind of saying that ironically because everybody is saying that.
Yeah,
you have people on the left saying that this is cause for socialized medicine and single payer and insurance problems. You have people on the right pointing out that Italy is basically having to make decisions on who to treat and leaving elderly people to die and say, nope, we don't want that. And so both sides are just using this as a means to basically say, well, we were right all along in this horrible, horrific atrocity is a perfect example.
Exactly. And, you know, there's many more articles, and we'll link to them on Consumer Choice Radio. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker 106.7 FM. We could talk about this for a long time. There's many more clips and good articles, and I'm sure there's I mean, the tweet sphere is crazy with the amount of snark that exists out there. But everybody's self-quarantined and self-distancing at home, so they're just snarking out all day. But I think it'd be a good opportunity to figure out a Simpsons clip here, David, that may have predicted this crisis.
Yes.
Are you ready for this?
Let's hear it.
All right, fire the clip, Jamie.
I'd like to call to order this secret conclave of America's media empires. We're here to come up with the next phony baloney crisis to put Americans back where they belong, in dark rooms glued to their televisions too terrified to skip the commercials.
Well, I think...
NBC, you are here to listen and not speak. I think we should go with a good old-fashioned public health scare.
Yeah.
A new disease. No one's immune. It's like the summer of the shark, except instead of a shark, it's an epidemic. And instead of summer, it's all the time.
That is smoke.
Now, I hate to be the guy who derails what everybody else loves.
He loves being that guy.
But, Janice, we do have standards. This can't be a made-up disease. The only moral thing to do is release a deadly virus into the general public.
We do have something we've been holding on to, but it hasn't been tested. Get over here, NBC.
Well, we certainly believe in testing, but I... Oh.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So, we've got our deadly disease. Now, we just have to blame it on something that's in every household, something that people are a little bit afraid of already.
House cat flu is coming, people. The Center for Disease Disinformation predicts with some degree of probability that the house cat flu might spread in the following hypothetical outbreak pattern. So, petter beware, that warm body on your lap just might be ready to destroy your tender vittles.
So, yeah, not exactly a prediction, but just good funny clip from The Simpsons. We need that every now and then. Come on, it can't all just be all the bad and crazy stuff. I mean, while all this is going on in the background, there's something very important that's also happening.
I am once again asking for your financial support.
We got an election going on, ladies and gentlemen. We got a Democratic primary that ain't done yet. We got good old Uncle Joe, which, yep. I mean, now we can finally talk about it, was able to blast through, win Michigan, win a couple other states. And, I mean, if I even went back and listened to this program, I'm sure we were thinking Bernie Sanders was just inevitable. And now everything's been turned on its head completely. And is Joe Biden in the head? Bernie Sanders looking sad and down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there is a realistic path for Bernie to win. This feels very similar to the last time around with Hillary, where he may go all the way to the convention, but there's no path to victory based on the momentum that Joe has and based on the endorsements that he has.
There were states that he did not even visit or even come close to, and he still won by huge margins.
Yeah, and he beat Bernie Sanders with the demographics that he is supposed to carry in terms of his supposed appeal, Bernie's supposed appeal to African Americans and supposed appeal to working class voters. What's hilarious is that in a state like Michigan, which Biden won quite handily, he actually took the majority of those voters away from Bernie, voters who voted for Bernie against Hillary. And so it's clear that Biden has the appeal that Bernie does not, and that those groups are much more interested in what someone like Joe Biden has to offer, which you could argue is not very much, as opposed to what Bernie Sanders has to offer.
Well, I don't know. I did see, and I think you were among the group on, again, hate to bring it up, on Twitter, that had this clip of Joe Biden, who was out in Michigan, who was, you know, in the pit with the union workers, and we saw that old side of Uncle Joe. So I actually have a better clip that you might have heard. This is the clip of Joe Biden arguing with the union guy about guns.
Yes.
I've had to bleep this for radio, but I did find the video of the guy who's the closest. So let's see if we can listen to this. Audio might be a bit off, but I think you should still be able to hear it.
You plan to not only keep us working, but how you intend on getting the union vote when there's a large portion of the union workers that are gun enthusiasts, and you are actively trying to diminish our Second Amendment right and take away our guns.
You're full of
All right, thank you.
Now, shush.
Shush.
I support the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. And from the very beginning, I have a shotgun, I have a 20 gauge, a 12 gauge, my sons hunt. Guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon.
Now, that was kind of weird because he says, guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon.
Yeah. But, yeah. So what he's doing, the problem there is he's using – the problem is he's misusing firearm and weapon or using them interchangeably.
Yeah. And it's all and semantics. So, it's all about words and what they mean and machine gun versus whatever. I do have to play the rest, though, because he makes one hilarious gaffe that all the gun owners love.
I'm not taking your gun away at all. You need 100 rounds.
So when you were in Beto, when you said you're going to take our guns,
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones they're putting out there. They're simply a lie.
Your voice, you said that you're taking the guns.
Well, he just clarified it.
Wait. Take your AR-14s away.
Okay, this is not okay.
Hold on.
We're going to take your AR-14s away. Sorry.
I mean, so there's a bunch of funny factual issues with obviously what Joe is saying, but I actually love the fact that he gives it right back to this guy.
Yeah, but you know,
I think it's a refreshing side of a politician who, rather than give some weaselly answer, basically saying, like, rather than deflecting or giving some non-answer, he confronts the guy right away. Now, he could be full of it and wrong, but I do actually like that. I think that perfectly highlights how awesome Trump versus Biden will be, because just imagine those two old guys going at it on a debate stage.
I do have to say, though, that the coverage on the, quote, cognitive decline have been pretty convincing. Maybe I'm in the echo chamber a little bit, and all of this, much like the coronavirus, is all confirmation bias. Right. Anybody looks at this video and they see either like unhinged guy screaming at union workers, or they see like awesome Joe punching back against the critics. You know, everyone's gonna see it their own way. But we have to look at his opponent. And again, the race ain't over. And we're living through the black swan of the coronavirus right now, which is making life hell for many people everywhere. There's plenty of other stuff going on. Let's listen to Bernie Sanders, because I'm reading this morning that this was actually more of a concession speech. This is after the primary elections on Tuesday. This is Sanders coming out, obviously deflated completely.
Last night, obviously, was not a good night for our campaign from a delegate point of view. We lost in the largest state up for grabs yesterday, the state of Michigan. We lost in Mississippi, Missouri, and Idaho. On the other hand, we won in North Dakota, and we lead the vote count in the state of Washington, the second largest state contested yesterday.
So then you do have a lot of the people who were after that kind of taking a victory lap. You had a lot of the major media that was like, it's over. Biden's all in. And, you know, that's kind of what we've been blanketed with. I'm still uncertain. You know, I think the delegate separation is only like 100 or 200. It's not automatic that all the people who voted for Buttigieg or all the delegates automatically go to Joe Biden, by the way.
Yeah, I think the projections that it's over come down to the fact that in a two-horse race for the remainder of the states, it's unlikely that Bernie gets to a point where he can get to 45-48% and actually overcome the gap. So, I mean, you mentioned coronavirus and obviously the Trump administration having to deal with that and the impact that that's going to take on voter intent and how they feel about him. Another serious question is, if Bernie stays in the race, what's the point? Other than to tarnish Joe Biden and continue to try and take him down a peg. And what impact does that have for Joe going into the general election? In the same way that Bernie ridiculing Hillary for the remainder of the campaign, even though he was out, only served to push voters away from Hillary. And so is Bernie going to do the same thing again? and push voters away from Biden.
I mean, it's his last shot, right? He's, what, 77, 78 years old? It's his last shot in federal politics to make a huge difference. And it's not even his party, by the way. He's not a Democrat. He's running for the nomination, but he's not a member of the party. I would, if I were him, I would just go full scorched earth. But again, that's why I'm not on the Bernie Sanders campaign, and I'm on Consumer Choice Radio here on the Big Talker 106.7 FM. I wanted to play one more clip in relation to this, and that's Van Jones. He's one of the only refreshing guys on CNN. So he's talking about,
I like him.
He's talking about the inevitable wrapping up of the race, if that is to be the case, and what is going to happen with the Bernie Sanders people. What's going to happen with the insurgency, with the revolutionaries? What's going to happen? And I think it's a very good question, because I have a lot of friends from back home all over North Carolina that I went to school with, people that I'm not necessarily in political agreement with, that were all in on Bernie. You know, they're saying we need to go out and vote, and these are not normally political people. You know, so these are very much reminiscent of the Ron Paul campaign, 2008, 2012. These are the type of people who, what are they going to do when it comes to November? Are they going to be burned by the Democrat primary process and not go out for Bernie? So here's Van Jones on that.
This is a very dangerous moment for the Democratic Party. You have now an insurgency that's about to be defeated. What do you do with the people that you defeat? There was a hope on the part of a lot of young people they had a champion. You got young people who are graduating with $250,000 in debt. You got young people with a lot of pain, and they had a champion. Mm-hmm. And that they thought that they were going to be able to surround a divided establishment with their movement, crush that divided establishment, and move forward. Instead, the establishment united and stopped them. Now what do you do? Last time Bernie Sanders got beaten, there was an assumption that all these people were just going to fall in line and vote against Trump, and there was not enough care for the concern and the pain of his base. I think tonight there's going to be a lot of crowing, a lot of relief on the part of the establishment, but keep it temperate and turn. Turn to those people and say, we want to be your champion. Yeah. If you don't do that, you're going to have a pyrrhic victory.
So good fresh points from Van Jones on that.
Yeah.
What do you do with the insurgents?
I mean, I also think that, and I don't think someone like Van would ever admit this, but Bernie Sanders has a lot more in common with Donald Trump than people think. And we saw that so Hillary didn't lose because the Bernie Sanders voters just didn't vote. She also lost because a significant chunk of them voted for Trump, because it's just the opposite side of that populist coin.
Well, anti-elite.
Rather than scapegoating the millionaires and the billionaires, he's scapegoating immigrants, or they both scapegoat trade and talk about how bad certain trade deals are. So for those people who were looking for that kind of revolutionary change, Donald Trump wasn't that unreasonable of an extension of their own worldview. And so I think that that's something that we'll see how that plays out this time around, because Trump was relatively unknown before. But you could see 15-20% of those hardcore Bernie supporters move back over to Trump like they did the last time.
I am once again asking for your financial support.
So there's so much more to come out of that, and there's going to be a couple more primaries in the next couple of days and weeks, and we'll see how everything is impacted by the coronavirus mess, the black swan that is above, in a little dark cloud above all of our heads right now, messing up a lot of our plans. But while it might be messing up the plans of some or many, there's a lot of things that are happening in the background that people are not really paying attention to. And I thought, since we're on Consumer Choice Radio, we are going out to all the listeners in the earbuds and on your devices right now, let's cover some stuff that's not being discussed that is happening. This is happening mostly in D.C., but also in Russia. There's a lot of stuff that's happening with gas prices. And guess what? It's time to renew the Patriot Act. Let's listen to Massey, Representative Massey, who's going to talk about what exactly is happening in the background. While everyone is freaking out about corona, they're trying to pass Patriot Act once more. Let's listen in.
Mr. Speaker, some of my colleagues today will offer a bill to reauthorize the Patriot Act. It'll have the thin varnish of reform on it, designed to whitewash the egregious constitutional violations that have been going on. But it's the Americans who are going to be shellacked by this legislation and the process used to pass it. I want to read the Fourth Amendment and part of the Fifth Amendment here today on the floor to the Constitution. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And the Fifth Amendment says, nor shall any person be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So let's think about some of these words, because they're being treated as if they're curse words or dirty words today. Warrant, due process, probable cause. These are all things that are guaranteed as rights for all Americans in the Constitution. And none of those can be guaranteed without transparency. We can't have star chambers and kangaroo courts. This has to happen in daylight, and it has to be reviewable by the people in order to know that these things are true. So these things, they're inconvenient. A warrant, due process, probable cause. They're inconvenient for investigators. They're inconvenient for prosecutors. They sometimes get in the way. They make the job a little bit harder of finding the criminals, of finding the terrorists. But they're guaranteed rights of all Americans. So we have to keep them in the process.
So there's an article from the Daily Beast. Dems yep. working with Trumpsters to re-up the Patriot Act. The House leaders are still negotiating, but they're largely taking intrusive post-9/11 surveillance for granted. So this is what's happening in the background of everything with coronavirus. While you and I are talking about masks and we're talking about, you know, the markets and what's going to happen, these people are trying to pass the Patriot Act, which, again, harms individual citizens and consumers. I mean, it means that all of your phone calls, I mean, we don't need to go into the gist of everything that the Patriot Act covers, but even your library books. I mean, this has been very extensive surveillance. This is the perfect opportunity to actually vote this down. You would hope that Trump would come out and say this, but unfortunately, it's kind of getting lost in the wind.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things where you just worry that the government will use what is a serious crisis to, there are two approaches here. One is that nothing gets done. It's almost like the Brexit model of legislating, where nothing gets done until we figure out what to do about coronavirus and its spread. That to me sounds ideal. In terms of the government not enacting additional legislation. The alternative is they use the distraction to sweep a whole bunch of different pieces of legislation in while the electorate is distracted. That's a huge problem. And then, I mean, on this side, it seems like that's exactly what's happening with re-upping the Patriot Act, is you have all of these egregious privacy violations, but the electorate's focus is not on that, and it won't be, while the headlines are coronavirus and travel restrictions and closing schools and major sporting events being canceled or done without fans and all of those things. And so it's a concerning trend if legislators are just using this as a distraction.
And there's one more sort of thing that's happening in the background that as I called it on the tweeters, I call this step four in use coronavirus to push your agenda that would never pass at any other time. this is an article from Bloomberg. Fear of virus-tainted dollars opens new front in the war on cash.
Yes.
So a lot of local businesses are saying, hey, in abundance of caution, we ask that you please pay with credit card or debit card. This has a lot of people very happy, very excited, because now we can just go all digital. And now you do see movement from some people to basically say, okay, well, now there ought to be a law. Let's just go completely cashless.
Yeah, and that has some real negative ramifications for those who don't have access to credit
Or people who don't want to give plat, because again, with the Patriot Act and it's connected, you know, all of your transactions are also collected, and you know, you can have the government knowing exactly how many times you went to Starbucks and bought that Frappuccino,
and where and when,
and where and when, and all the metadata that comes with that. So yeah, a lot of problematic stuff there. I think there's going to be many more things that'll come out. So just stay vigilant out there, folks. You're listening to this program because you're vigilant and because you care about your consumer rights, your consumer freedoms, and hopefully we can, you know, get you a bit more attuned to that, because we know very soon you're going to have a guy who's going to be at the door.
Prime Now.
Who's going to be bringing your Amazon Prime. Just let's start thinking about all this stuff and all the grander ramifications.
There was actually one good joke, if we are at the point where we can tell jokes about coronavirus.
It's too soon, but we'll allow it. We'll allow
it. Yeah, okay. So there was, unfortunately, someone in shipping and receiving at Amazon HQ, I believe in Seattle, who tested positive. And the meme going around online was, okay, great, everyone's going to get coronavirus in 1 to 2 business days.
Yes.
Yeah.
Only if you're a Prime member, though.
Yes. Prime now. If you're not, then you got to wait.
Yeah, then you're safe. Wow. Yeah. And there's just so much stuff that's connected to this. All right, let's do one more. I think I want to close out. Let's try to close out the Corona segment if we can. But here's something that's kind of happening in the background. It has to do with energy. Those of you who are listening now with our station, Wilmington, North Carolina, or throughout the U.S., are noticing that gas prices are uber cheap right now, and there is somewhat of an oil war.
Oil suffering a historic collapse today after Saudi Arabia shocked the market by launching a price war against its one-time ally, Russia. The Kremlin's decision not to agree to production cuts led the Saudis to massively increase their production, which sent oil prices plummeting. And this came as a huge hit to U.S. producers, many of whom can't make a profit at these low prices. Now, let's bring in former Shell Oil President John Hofmeister. He's on the phone with us. So, John, you think this was a direct attack by Putin against our successful oil producers? Make your case.
Yes. Putin is very angry at the success of the United States, plus compounded by the sanctions that the U.S. has placed upon him. Now, he's also intolerant of a crown prince half his age telling him what he should be doing with OPEC. So Putin's on his own here, and he's not afraid to challenge the United States shale industry, nor is he afraid to embarrass the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. So we're in for a pretty rough time in the coming months.
And John, question for you. We've seen an awful lot of these oil price wars in the past. One thing that has not changed is that Russia is very dependent on oil revenues. 40% of their budget is from oil and gas exports. How can they really survive with all the tensions in Russia right now, the need to up social programs, et cetera? Can they really stick this out for several months?
I think they can for several months, but not for much longer than that, because you're right. They do need the oil revenues for much of their national income, but not as much as Saudi Arabia.
True.
Saudi Arabia is even more dependent on those revenues to keep the state running and to provide all the subsidies to the Saudi Arabian people that the oil produces.
So this is basically a huge, huge factor for a lot of people, energy prices. And energy prices going down means it's much more affordable to gas up, to tank up your vehicle. At the same time, it means that the energy industry is suffering. So it's this kind of pharmaconic time where it's good times for many consumers because they're not having to spend as much. But at the same time, there's a lot of the energy industry that is losing profits massively. And we see this kind of nice little war happening between Saudi Arabia and Russia. And I mean, these are two petro states, so... Jesus, what does this mean for us in the end? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think the other loser in this scenario, which isn't immediately talked about, but is something that will soon be seen by many state governments and provincial governments and even national governments, is governments, legislative bodies and their budgets, are going to be absolutely destroyed by the lower price of oil. And that's mostly because, so if you look at the Canadian province of Alberta or Newfoundland and Labrador, a significant chunk of their budget, in terms of where they get their tax revenue from, comes from natural resource taxation. And so they've put way too many of their eggs in that basket. And when there's a market turndown, I mean, I think some of the numbers are as high as 16-17% of a particular provincial's a province's budget is reliant on oil revenues at, let's say, $50 a barrel or whatever it is. And so when you go down to 30, all of a sudden these governments are now in budgetary crisis. Newfoundland and Labrador, which is Canada's furthest, most eastern province, is on the brink of bankruptcy. Alberta is in trouble, and they were already hurting. I don't know what the U.S. numbers are, but I can only assume that there are some state governments who have relied upon natural resource tax revenue maybe too heavily, and they're going to take a hit. So it's that's another significant problem, is like an impending debt crisis as a result of this.
And there's a lot more that'll come on that. We'll have more news. I mean, we've already had a lot of energy issues in Canada the last couple of weeks because of the blockade that we've talked about in the previous episodes. If you want to go back and listen to those convos, I think we covered it pretty well. Go over to consumerchoiceradio.com. You can listen to that. It's been a busy time on the radio, David. I was lucky enough to host Mornings with Joe Catanacci yesterday, Friday, on this station, yep. The Big Talker. So it was actually a pretty long show. Good conversation. David, you were even on the horn.
Yes, I was. Thank you for having me on that program. Yeah,
and we're gonna ahead and publish a lot of those interviews and stuff. And when we had a nice North Carolina hour, so we talked a lot about North Carolina politics and some of the main issues that we've discussed here on this program as well, talking about alcohol, liberalization, talking about the media, a lot more about economics as well, income inequality. We talked about Cuban healthcare versus American and Canadian healthcare. Yep. There's a lot of really interesting topics, so we'll definitely link that as well. You'll find that at consumerchoiceradio.com. This is a program that is produced by the Consumer Choice Center, and our colleagues are all now self-quarantined and practicing, is it self-distancing? What is it?
Social distancing.
Social distancing. They're all practicing social distancing and being very highly productive by writing articles. Here's one from our colleague, Bill Wietz. And since Bill is locked in his room in Luxembourg right now, we're going to try to get him on for next week.
Yeah, perfect.
His article in Spiked Online, Spiked Magazine, The Rise of Green Conspiracy Theories. Oh, man. He's got a lot of great stuff on the eco-warriors and specifically those who talk about organic, organic, organic all day and how this is actually harming more people, particularly all the conspiracy theories on things like gene editing or pesticides. Very good article there. And one of mine finally got published. I actually wrote this a while ago. It's A Push for Smart Regulation of CBD. This was published in the CSP Daily. I believe it's Convenience Store Petroleum News or something like this. But a great magazine, mostly for the convenience and retailing industry. They're very interested in CBD. There's a lot of you are probably driving to gas stations, and while you're enjoying those record low gas prices, you probably pop into the station, enjoy a Red Bull, buy a vape, and then you also see that there is some CBD available in some of these gas stations. So I kind of detail some of the latest regulations, what people are talking about, how they are going to differentiate between THC and the CBD, and more of the evidence that the FDA is asking for to create the new regulations. So we've got many more hits like that. You can go to consumerchoicecenter.org, where we have a lot of these, and we're continuing to push for consumer choice, even under lockdown, even under social distancing. We're busy, we're active, and we're trying to promote consumer choice.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Lots more to come in terms of publishing, especially as we are all secluded and travel is limited. So there'll certainly be a lot more that we do write upon. Actually, I just recently wrote about an issue that is emerging or continuing to emerge in Canada, which is a variety of different environmental groups still waging their war on single-use plastics, which is, in the context of a pandemic outbreak, silly and outrageous, but also misguided, because some of their policy suggestions actually end up doing more harm to the environment than good. And so it seems that despite the fact that reusable cutlery and plates and coffee cups are not ideal or to be used, there are still some who are advocating that, despite the fact that it could be putting consumer safety at risk with this pandemic.
That's a great piece. So we'll link that as well in the show notes, consumerchoiceradio.com. So you'll be able to read over that. And actually, that's a very good argument for the cocktail parties as well. If you're even able to have cocktail parties anymore, maybe it's all virtual. It's all on Skype now. Who knows?
I've never had one of those. That would be interesting. Everyone kind of sitting on Skype drinking a beer.
I was thinking of doing a virtual happy hour and making it like a kind of... I don't even know what technology you use nowadays. I guess it's like a Google Hangout. I remember, like, back in the day, some presidential candidates of smaller parties used to do like the Hangout. I think Gary Johnson used to do that, and you could join and ask him questions, be in the room.
Yeah.
I think we could do that.
It sounds intriguing. The big question is, how do you do it without talking over each other?
Well, David, we managed to do it.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, yeah. But I could just picture 20 people in a Google Hangout and either nobody knowing what to say or everybody talking.
So what's the weather like over there, guys? You heard about Corona? Yeah, coronavirus getting pretty bad.
Yeah, you canceled your vacation, eh?
I am once again asking for your financial support.
So I wanted to play one. I want to do a whole segment here, David. This is going to go in depth. I don't know if you're ready. Are you ready for this?
All right.
All right, get your AR-14. Yes. Let's get all jacked up here. We're going to talk about California's AB-5 law.
Okay.
Now, the California AB-5 law, this is the law that essentially, I mean, let's simplify it, basically outlawed freelancers and tried to make sure that everyone who works, quote unquote, works for a company in the gig economy is considered an employee. Now, on the face of it, this was signed into law in September by Governor Gavin Newsom. The person who had been pushing it the most is Lorena Gonzalez. She's a state assemblywoman. And essentially what this does is it makes sure that independent contractors, if they are working at a particular company or if they're an Uber driver or Lyft driver, they use DoorDash or something like that, that they have full benefits. Therefore, they are considered employees. Now, seems great on its face. Sounds like, okay, fine, everyone's going to be treated and everybody will get their benefits. They'll be paid at least minimum wage. They'll get Social Security, these kind of things. But what happens afterwards? Well, there's a lot of people who get fired, who lose their positions. A lot of freelance journalists basically just get pushed out of the market. Nobody's hiring in California anymore if you're a writer. There's the limit that's imposed, I believe, is 36 articles a year is the maximum that you're able to write for a publication without being considered an employee. And instead of complying, most news outlets, including something like Vox and SB Nation, who were championing this law, actually ended up firing all those people.
So yeah, exactly. What happened is they just condensed their workforce. And I mean, I don't like to celebrate the suffering of other people, but I forget the journalist's name. This particular person worked at Vox, had written at length about how this law was great and that it was not going to hurt the industry, and then was one of the people included in the layoffs at Fox.
Yeah. And this is the kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, the Twitter sphere went insane with this. Too many jokes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's like, if only someone had told you that this was going to happen, then it's like, wait a second, everybody told you this was going to happen.
I think this is something that we even did. We even put out a press release in, I think it was September. Just saying, hey, this is not going to have the impact that you think it will. This will actually harm a lot of people, and we'll probably, you know, get a lot of people losing their positions, losing their jobs, and that's exactly what happened. Let's go through a breakdown. This is John Stossel from Reason Magazine. He's got a nice YouTube channel. He kind of gives it a bit more color, and he talks to some freelancers as well.
You have to work 70, 80 hours a week just to survive.
Freelancers like Uber drivers are being abused, say the media.
This driver has a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, but says he hardly gets to spend any time with them.
I have to work every single day, more than 10 hours, 11 hours.
So in California, unions pushed for a new law. It passed.
Make sure that the 1 million independent contractors in California get the wages and benefits that they deserve.
Assemblywoman Gonzalez wrote the law that dictates millions of freelancers must now be hired as employees. Gig workers win historic victories, said the media. They'll get benefits they need, like a minimum wage, overtime, sick pay. Politicians said this will help freelancers a lot.
You're thinking you're helping us, but you're not.
Freelancers like Ari Herstand say this law hurts us.
This law was written to help the little guy. I'm the little guy. I'm a musician. This could single-handedly crash the California music economy. I'll play a gig at a venue in LA, and I want to hire a drummer, a bassist, and a guitar player, $200 each. Now, before, I just cut them a check for $200. Now, I actually have to take that drummer, put him on payroll, W-2 him, get workers' comp insurance, unemployment insurance. I have to pay payroll taxes. I also have to now hire a payroll company. Not only that.
If he works for someone else.
I'm going to have to be an employee of that music venue when I just play there once a year maybe. And so the music venues, we're going to start to see those shutting down.
Having a good one? Yep.
The law targeted rideshare companies like Uber and Lyft. Politicians claim the companies abuse drivers. But now many drivers are upset by the law, saying, I like being independent.
I don't want a boss to tell me when or where to drive.
I like making money making deliveries because I'm on my own schedule.
So that's a nice breakdown. But I wanted to, before we comment on that, David, let's listen to Lorenza Gonzalez, who introduced this law, and she goes on local San Diego television to defend it. And just listen to, she is being just ripped to shreds. I love this.
And as you can see, as you just heard, AB5 really has put thousands of people in a variety of professions out of work. They were freelancers, independent contractors, and now they're wondering how they're going to make a living here.
Joining us now is a legislator who authored that bill, State Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez. We want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks. I want to start with this. I appreciate that you're taking people, saying there's thousands of people. There is no indication that there are thousands of people out of work. So I understand that's what you've been told by some folks, but there's absolutely no data or indication to suggest that thousands of people have been put out of work. So I want to explain really fast what AB5 is. In April of 2018, there was a Supreme Court decision in California. It was unanimous and bipartisan, and it said, enough. We've had misclassification of employees forever, and we've had enough of it. So we're going to make it really clear. You're presumed to be an employee if you work for a company and do the work of that company. It's really clear and easy. So we started with that. There were a lot of industries that said, oh, hold up. This doesn't work for us. So we codified it into law with AB5. It was a Supreme Court decision under Dynamics. We codified it into law and said, we've got to clean up our misclassification issues in California. And that's what we did with AB5. AB5 allows for legitimate small business, even sole proprietors, to operate as such. They're able to do so if they're actually operating as a small business. What it doesn't allow is a company to have permalancers, to have people who are freelancing for them with absolutely working the same way as an employee would work, but without the benefits of an employee status.
Thanks so much. You know, if it wasn't for you, all of these poor people would just be left to negotiate on their own, and they'd be taken advantage of because these people are too dumb, too stupid, too idiotic to make their own contracts. So all these freelancers... Basically. Yeah, we're helping you.
I mean, completely. So she's basically saying you have to go through the paperwork and legal hurdles to be a sole proprietor, which carries its own burdens, or you have to be an employee. And so should they completely carve out the other third kind of rail of working or employment, which is this gig economy, which, I mean, as much as some who are not in it may ridicule it and may say that people have to work a lot or there are no health benefits and all of those things. That some of that may be true. But at the end of the day, we're talking about adults deciding between each other how to make money. Like the first person in that clip who just wants to play, get paid to play music at a coffee shop, it should be totally appropriate for a coffee shop to hire him to play a show and just simply cut a check. There's no need to get the government involved in that.
Sure.
And all it does is just consolidate things where, I mean, if we take music as an example, these venues will just consolidate who they hire. So it's like, oh, well, if we have to make these guys employees rather than having like a rotating cast of talent, well, we'll just have one.
And her most effective opponent apparently is the straw man. So let's listen to this clip.
Yes.
This is her debating. If you're maybe going against AB5 and the ideas of it, then obviously you just want 12-year-olds to work.
If you allow a company, and we've seen journalism companies, we've seen Coast News, in fact, it's a great example. I think it was a tribute there, where they fired all their employees, they fired them, and said, we will rehire you as an independent contractor. So no longer do you get any benefits, no longer do you have any protections, you can come work for us in this provision. By the way, when they have to compete, when other companies have to compete against them, that's unfair competition for the companies who are doing the right thing and abiding by state law.
Isn't that their choice? Wouldn't that be my choice to decide if I want to work for that company? I mean, AB5 has really taken the choice away from me, and it's been made for me before I've even gotten a chance to step up to the plate.
Well, absolutely. Is it your choice if you want to work for less than minimum wage? Do we allow that?
It's my choice if I want to have a full-time job or if I want to have a 9-to-5 job, if I want to work in an office or my home.
That's still your choice. That's still your choice. But what we don't allow is companies to say, we will only hire people who are willing to give up their protections for minimum wage, for overtime. Let's take it way back, right? This is labor law in the United States in general. We don't allow people to say, I have a 12-year-old who wants to work. It's their choice. They want to work. Go ahead and let them work. We don't allow that because then it's a race to the bottom. What we want to ensure that it's a fair playing field and that businesses who do the right thing aren't put at a competitive disadvantage.
Oh, just garbage. So
12-year-olds. I mean, yeah, so let's support this legislation that completely tramples on the choice of adults and use, 1920s child labor law as the justification? Mm.
And the journalists, the reporters who were in the studio, like, just push back so hard. I love that.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful.
That's
good. So you can watch that clip. We'll put it in consumerchoiceradio.com. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's happening across the country and across the world, David. That's why we need to be on the radio. We need to be exposing this stuff. And that's why we're here discussing it every week here on the Big Talker 106.7 FM. I think it's been a pretty good program, David.
Yeah, it's been another great week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you stay safe out there, and we will reconvene with you next Saturday.
We'll be back, and until then, keep on listening. Stay safe, stay clean, wash those hands, and let's hope that we can continue to promote consumer choice. All the best.